Hello and welcome to Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions, where every episode we discuss some scientific misconceptions and we hope that you learn something you didn't already know about the world. I'm here with my co-host, Camden, Don't Take Money from Billionaires, Hanslick Burton.
And joining me is my co-host, Margaret, There's No Option Like No Public Option, Hanslick Burton.
Welcome to the show. So our first segment every week is where we share something that we're excited about. Camden, because you're the eldest, you go first.
Yes, I am eldest, always. I went to Nashville last week, which was fun, for a teaching conference. And then I went to my very first ever AAAS, the American Association for the Advancement of Science Conference. Their national conference was here in Seattle, and I went to it. And it was very cool. It was very science-y. I got to hang out and show people how neuroscience works with some hands-on experiments. And it was really fun. Yeah, there's people from all over the world talking science.
Yeah, it seemed like it was really cool to share that kind of, I'd say nerdy in the kindest way, knowing that I'm part of this community, nerdy enthusiasm with everybody. That's what it sounded like when you came back.
Yeah, it was just very, very cool to just have people from all around the world just like there to do science.
Yeah. Well, I am excited about Goodwill. Can't recommend it highly enough. Love Goodwill. This week, I needed some pants for work. And so I went to Goodwill because my goal is to buy 90% of my clothes this year from secondhand places. And we have a ton of great Goodwills in Seattle. So I went to Goodwill and I got 3 new pairs of work pants, 1 pair of great snow pants, some black overalls, which I cannot wait to wear. Some shoes, a workout tank top. I got all of that for like $50. It's amazing. And if you have not been to Goodwill, give it a shot. I love it.
Yeah. Goodwill's great. In fact, the Goodwill that we frequent very often was featured in Macklemore's Thrift Shop, music video from back in the day.
International District, baby.
International District.
All right, so let's head into the main segment of our show, which, of course, features the misconception. So every week, we each bring a new scientific misconception to the table. We explain them, we share them, and we discuss them. And as a note, as our listeners will know, every week, we don't share the misconception that we're going to be talking about. So Cameron doesn't know what I'm going to share. He doesn't know, or I don't know what he's going to share. So we get to learn along with you.
I don't even know what I'm going to share.
Well, I hope you do. So, we usually flip a coin to see who goes first. It's never really a coin. What do we have today?
What do we have?
We have this candle lighter. We have like the little clicky.
Oh, here. Let's set the table on fire. And
oh, that was real close to the microphone.
Oh, wow. That did spike in the microphone. I'm interested to see what that sounds like.
All right. So let's flip it. We can do the switch side or the non-switch side.
Switch side.
That's what you're calling it?
Melt your microphone.
It's fine. It's fine. A little hot, but all right. You're calling the switch side?
Switch side.
So whoever it lands on is going first. Okay.
Yep. This makes no sense if you've never seen a fire.
Hey,
lighter.
It's Camden. I feel like
it was me again.
You weigh everything. All
here,
right.
We go. All right. This one's for science. All right, Margaret. I don't have a fun intro like I normally do.
Okay.
This one's pretty straightforward.
Great.
There's no imagining yourself locked out of your car in the desert.
Ugh.
Or bitten by a snake.
I can't imagine anything.
Sure. Okay. Here, let me paint you a picture.
Thank you.
You see a puppy.
Okay, I'm closing my eyes. I'm seeing a puppy. So okay. Happy. Yep.
If you're driving, please don't close your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
See a little puppy.
Mm-hmm.
You walk up to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so happy. Its tail starts just wagging. And it gets, you know how dogs get so excited where their whole body starts shaking?
Yes, their butt shakes, okay.
Yeah. And you bend down and it just starts licking your little face.
Uh-huh.
And today you had decided to use red, green, and blue foundation.
Oh, always.
And this dog is just lick, lick, licking you, lick, lick, licking you. And then it opens its eyes to look at you after it sort of calms down. And it sees those colored dots on your face.
Mm-hmm.
What do they look like to the little puppy?
I feel like I have been led to believe that dogs are colorblind.
Mm. Interesting. Today's sources are the American Kennel Club, Live Science.
Oh, never mind. I won't reveal anything. Okay, go ahead.
And Smithsonian.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into it. The misconception, can dogs see color? So where did why are you looking at me like this?
Oh, no, I'll tell you in a little bit.
Okay. This isn't yours, is it?
No, it's not. Okay. It's not mine. No.
Sorry. Everyone at home, Margaret's just staring at me with the widest eyes.
I'm attentive. I'm listening.
You're attuned.
I'm not sleepy at all. Go ahead.
We're both sleepy.
We're both sleepy.
So where did this myth come from? A person named Will Judy in 1937 published a manual called Training the Dog that is quoted to say, "It's likely that all the external world appears to dogs as varying highlights of black and gray." No substantiation, no evidence, just throwing that out.
It's a person with two first names.
Yeah,
so.
Will Judy. I kept reading that going, "Will Judy what?" And I'm glad you laughed at that.
I'm sure tired.
Anybody here with the name Will is like, And then there were more claims continuing past the 30s and into the 60s where I guess it became popular that people were like, yeah, dogs can't see in color. And in fact, only primates can see in color. Just because
I feel like what you're going to say is it seems like it's like the, well, we are very special. So we are the only ones who can see with the best, like, we have the best possible eyesight, of course, because we're the most highly evolved.
Yeah, I think there's nothing here that, like, says people didn't go into it deeply beyond that. I think it just stuck because people are like, sure, we must see better than they do. And it also sort of came from this idea that what do we know about dogs and, like, what types of light they see well in?
Mm-hmm.
We know dogs are good night hunters. And so people thought, okay, well, they see well in low light. They probably just see in, like, black and white to help them with that.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they need to see in color? Blah, blah, blah. So what colors do dogs see in if they do see in color? They do see in color.
I figured because you started this out as that's a misconception. So,
do you remember what the two types of light receptors are called in your eyeballs?
Cones and rods.
Yeah. Do you remember which ones do which?
Oh,
I have a way to help people remember.
The cones do color and the rods do light because cone starts with CO and color starts with CO.
That is always what I told my students as well.
Okay, great.
Cones and color, rods and black and white. So rods see black and white since color is also a form of light. Rods are also mostly found on the outside of your vision or outside of your eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
So it can help you also see what we think is our peripheral vision. There's like a fun test where you stick like two big thumbs out straight in front of your face.
Okay.
And wiggle them.
Okay.
And you see them wiggling.
Yep.
Now move those at like a 180 degree angle to your head.
Okay.
Wiggle them. Wiggle your thumbs.
Okay.
Do you see them wiggling?
No.
Do this. Pull them forward a bit until you can see your thumbs without them. Stop wiggling them.
Oh.
Can you see your thumbs without them wiggling? You're looking straight ahead.
I can see my right thumb.
Move your left.
Now I'm looking ahead and I can see both.
Okay. Move them just a little back. Can you see them anymore?
Yes.
Just move them right into the point where you can't.
Right there.
Okay. Now wiggle them.
I can see them.
Isn't that weird?
I don't like that.
Did you say Again, if you were driving, you've just crashed. But if you weren't, you can play with that game at home. That is a test of your peripheral vision and your rods. So they're detecting movement, low levels of light. Dogs have cones and rods. Humans have cones and rods. A lot of animals have cones and rods.
So the presence of cones mean they can see color.
If you got cones, you can see color. And just through dissection of eyeballs, people can see that people have cones or animals have cones. Mm-hmm. I will say it's special, but it's really not that special, which I'll get into later. We have trichromatic vision, which means we see
three colors,
three main colors. Mm-hmm. Do you know what those colors are?
Red, green, and blue.
Very good. Those are the ones. If you stare really close at old tube TVs, you'll see
those.
Like,
say, aren't most like screens made mm-hmm. out of those colors on a very like tiny, tiny, teensy, teensy scale?
Fun at home experiment. If you look at your iPhone or your cell phone screen mm-hmm. under a microscope.
Oh, I don't have that.
You'll see just red, green, and yellow, or red, green, and blue. Mm-hmm. It's very cool. Dogs are dichromatic, so they only see
two colors.
Dye. They have the blue and green cones, not the red. So
blue and green.
What you can infer from this
surmise.
Is that dogs do not see red very well. They do not distinguish red from green very well, mm-hmm. which you could say is very similar. And some of the articles I read were very similar to how you would describe someone who is red-green colorblind. Mm. So if you have a red ball in a field of grass, someone who is red-green colorblind is not going to distinguish that red ball out of the grass very well. Mm-hmm. And same with dogs. They showed, like, if they have red and green apples next to each other, they're just probably going to see them all as green. Mm. And that most of their vision is pretty well or pretty strong in like the blue-yellow range, but reds are not very, they're not very good with oranges and things like that.
Okay.
It's like blue-yellows they do well with, reds and greens, not as much.
Okay, so Christmas is a rough holiday for
them. It's such a rough holiday for them.
Holiday for them. Do you get it?
Did you get that?
Rough. It's always a good joke if you have to explain it.
Yeah, I think the long pauses are what's making it as funny. Dogs, however, do have a lot more rods, which makes sense because of what we do. What I said earlier is that dogs are
good night hunters.
And which makes sense. They do have a lot more rods, which help them see in low light. So that still checks out. Something that was interesting, though, is they were thinking, like, a popular counter to this, which of the people saying, like, well, if they have really good rods, maybe they can just see shades really well. Mm. They can't see colors, but they can see shades. So, like, people are like, oh, you can see color, oh, not really. It's just hues that they're really good at detecting. So a 2012 paper from the Proceedings of the Royal Society.
Very fancy.
The Royal Society. Very, very big thing. They had blue and yellow paper covering up food. Mm-hmm. And they trained the dogs that they would only get food if they looked at the yellow paper. Mm-hmm. And then to determine if it wasn't with hues, after 9 days of training them, they got rid of those blue and yellow papers and introduced a darker blue and a lighter yellow piece of paper. So
different
hues. It wasn't the same yellow anymore.
Okay.
And so this is like they really are preferencing like darker hues. Mm-hmm. They're going to do that. Or mm-hmm. they're going to less likely go to the yellow one.
Yeah.
But they still went to the yellow one.
Gotcha. That's a good experiment.
Yeah. And I liked it too because you probably do it at home. Mm-hmm. You can as long as you're ethically training your dog and still giving them food so they can eat.
Yes. Positive reinforcement.
Yes. Still use positive reinforcement, but they found that they would still find the color yellow.
Okay.
So what does that mean? Don't buy your dog red, orange colored toys. They see them. They're not invisible.
Funny because, like, the biggest toy on the market, I feel like, for dogs is Kong.
Uh-huh.
And they're all red.
Yeah, it's ironic. They won't distinguish them very well. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can see them, you know, so, and it will appear greenish to them.
Okay.
Depending on the backdrop. Because as people with colorblindness know, it's like, it depends on what it's next to mm-hmm. that tends to influence the color it kind of looks like. But they do really well with blue and yellows. And I'll leave you with some fun vision facts. Mantis shrimp.
Yeah.
I was going to say earlier that trichromatic vision is one more cone than a dog, but
like a
mantis shrimp.
Billion less cones.
Than yeah. A mantis shrimp has 12 cones.
Yeah.
So they could see crazy colors that
we can't even imagine.
Can't even think about.
Yep.
And birds and bees, some birds and bees can see in ultraviolet, which helps them see plant or colors that they can pollinate or colors of flowers that they want to pollinate.
Well, and some birds' beaks light up in UV light, like the Atlantic puffin. They think that one of the ways that they attract mates is with the ultraviolet glow of their beaks.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
I believe that's true.
And some snakes can see in infrared vision. So there's a lot of animals that have way better eyesight than we do.
At least way different eyesight
way
than
different.
We do.
Mm-hmm. Well, way better. We could go into eagles seeing
prey
from hundreds of feet up.
But it's all about what you need. We don't need to see, like, evolution has not selected for us being able to see that far away. So it works for them. Doesn't need to work for us. Nice job, Camden.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons I looked at you really strangely is because my misconception is also about dogs. And you started naming your sources. We have a couple of the same sources.
Nice. Good to know we find the right sources.
So my sources are Science Friday, American Kennel Club, Smithsonian Magazine, Live Science, Psychology Today, Pet MD, Washington Post, and the Seattle Aquarium.
Well, that makes sense then why your eyes did get wide.
Yeah.
They overlapped a bit.
Because I realized we had not, because usually, I'm sure we've said this before,
yeah.
Usually we share a clue word, but we didn't today. We didn't do it. So I got real nervous that we were doing the same one, which wouldn't have been the end of the world. But tell me about how dogs stay cool, Camden.
Oh, man.
Tell me about it.
They pant and they sweat out their tongue.
They sweat out their tongue. Mm-hmm. Say more. Say more about that.
The sweat leaves their tongue. That's why their tongues are so wet.
Yuck.
No, but that they do, supposedly they can't sweat. And the only way that they can like exchange or cool themselves down is by panting.
Yep. So that's the misconception is that dogs don't sweat. But they do.
No.
But speaking of hues and shades, there are different people who are like, well, it doesn't really count as sweating because it's not a significant contribution to their body regulation of heat.
Thermoregulation.
But I say, yes, they are sweating. It's just not their main way of keeping cool. So, just a little bit of background. There are different approaches to regulating temperature in the animal kingdom, including... Oh, are you going to say it? Go ahead.
Oh, I just remember a cool one.
Go ahead.
I don't remember all of it. Don't some like animals like whales or something like stick their fins out to cool down?
They might.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking about the two general categories of ectotherms and endotherms.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell me what ectotherms means?
So ecto means outside.
Mm-hmm.
So ectotherms control their temperature throughout like the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a lizard gets its heat from outside of its body, like the sun.
Yeah.
And endo means inside.
Endo means inside. So heat is generated inside their bodies. Exactly. Yeah. So ectotherms, it's outside. So that's why you often see reptiles sunning themselves on rocks. That's why people who have them as pets often have heat lamps. They better have heat lamps for them. And like you said, endotherms, the heat's generated inside their bodies. So lots of mammals, actually all mammals are endotherms. Sea otters, for example, need to eat a lot of food to power their internal furnaces to keep themselves warm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they usually eat a lot more calories, endotherms.
Because it's all going on inside. Yeah. Do you know the fancy word for overheating, Camden?
Spontaneous.
No.
Thermo.
Explosion.
Splashing.
So what's it called when you get really, really cold?
Hypothermia. Hyperthermia.
Yes, hyperthermia is the word for overheating. So how do humans regulate their temperatures? Well, humans are coats, that's true. I was thinking more of how they regulate their temperatures to cool down.
Ice buckets
sometimes. We're one of the few mammals that do sweat. We, according to Science Friday, quote, secrete water on the surface of the skin to stay cool, end quote.
My secretions.
Ugh. Humans, evolutionarily, we traded fur for sweat. Not decided, but that did happen. Humans, we have sweat glands all over our bodies, as anyone who's done hot yoga will know. I really felt that this week when I went to hot yoga. There's sweat glands everywhere.
Gross. I thought ladies don't sweat.
We glow. No, we sweat. We sweat hard in hot yoga. Ah,
another misconception.
Sweating for humans means that moisture covers our skin, and as that moisture evaporates, it cools us down. So we have two types of sweat glands, although not both of them don't cool us down. There's really only one kind that does. So the eccrine glands, they secrete an odorless liquid that evaporates and helps us regulate our temperatures. So they're the ones that are really helping us cool down. The apocrine glands, they are in the genital and armpit area, and they're the ones that have an odor to them. So when someone smells sweaty, it's probably because of those apocrine glands.
So you could say, oof, someone's apocrine glands are really acting really up. Working.
Yeah, so that is when that fluid comes into contact with the bacteria on the skin surface, and that reaction causes the the odor. And dogs have apocrine glands as well, which I'll mention in a moment. And in both dogs and in humans, they release the pheromones, and they don't help us to regulate temperature in any way.
So apocrine glands are not for thermoregulation.
No. At least not significantly.
So even though you sweat out your armpits when you're hot, that's not... I mean, I guess it's some of that is just sweaty.
Yeah.
But okay.
Again, not an expert on this subject, but that's what I understand.
Interesting.
So now let's talk a little bit about how dogs stay cool.
Let's.
So dogs and cats are called homeotherms, which means they have a consistent body temperature, which means I think that we are homeotherms as well. It shouldn't drastically increase or decrease. And for dogs and cats, that temperature is usually around 101 to 102 degrees Fahrenheit. So a little bit warmer than us, but not by much. Dogs do sweat, which I'll get to in a moment, but it's only one way they cool off. Only a few of the parts of dogs' bodies sweat. Because if they had sweat glands all over their bodies, their fur would keep the sweat from evaporating. So it would just be trapped there, and it would be gross and hot. Which is not a helpful hot.
And you need it to come in contact with the outside so that it can
evaporate.
That heat can be absorbed out.
Yeah, wick that heat away. Yeah, so there are two types of sweat glands on dogs. There are merocrine glands, which work kind of like the way our sweat glands do, and they are found in the paw pads of dogs. These merocrine glands, they are triggered when a dog gets hot, and this is why you can sometimes see paw prints on the ground when it's hot outside, because a dog's little paws are sweating a little bit.
Cute.
Experts think that sweaty paws may also possibly help dogs' paws stick to the ground and give them some traction. I don't know if that's very well founded, but...
So a hot dog is a good tracking dog.
Yes, there's a lot of traction on a hot dog.
I'm going to start taking hot dogs and sticking them on increasingly inclined planes.
So this is a fact that I love about dog feet, because I feel like we all know this fact if you've ever...
I'll say, how many dog feet facts do you have?
Well, just one. Okay. This is mostly, a couple. But so they sweat. So according to veterinarian Catherine Carrier, dog feet should smell, dog paw pads should
like
smell
armpits.
Like corn chips.
Oh, what? Why?
Because they sweat through their feet. So we're smelling that like salt, that saltiness.
dog feet should smell like corn chips. Why don't my arms smell like corn chips? I don't know. Corn chips.
But which is true. My nephew, who is a gorgeous lab mix named Winston.
I was going to say.
Hi, Winston. His feet, his little paws smell like Doritos. I've noticed this.
Why the cheese then?
I don't know. It's just sweaty. I don't know. Every dog, I mean, they all smell. Go out there and with permission, go and smell the paw pads of a dog you love and report back. What brand of chips they smell like.
Some are like a Lay's, a ruffled.
A Ruffles, yeah.
Wavy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Some kettle. Are like a Bugle.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that is all because of the Maricrine gland. The apocrine glands, again, they're the ones that we have. They're technically sweat glands, but they really help your dog release pheromones just like they help us release pheromones. And if you're wondering what pheromones are, don't worry. Smithsonian Magazine has the answer. They are airborne molecules that elicit a reaction in a member of the same species. These glands are in many different locations on a dog, and they help the dog identify other dogs from how they smell. So, sweating is something dogs do, but it's not the main way they cool themselves down. The main way, as you mentioned, is panting. So, when panting, moisture is evaporating from dogs' tongues, nostrils, and lungs as well. So the cool air is passing over those tissues, cooling the dog down. And I learned that they also use a process called, say it with me, vasodilation.
That is where they are dilating their blood so that something with heat.
Yeah, yeah. So basically in vasodilation, the blood vessels, especially on their ears and their face, they are widening so there's more surface area so that that blood can come to the surface, cool itself down before it goes back to the heart.
Oh, you know what? I think humans do that because I think that's why people get flush when they get hot.
Oh, I mean, that's probably true. I'll have to research that. But yeah, vasodilation, cooling it down because you're increasing the surface level, the surface area of the blood vessels.
Cool.
This technique of cooling themselves down, this works most effectively when the overheating in a dog is due to exercise, not due to high temperatures outside. And I also learned that fur, yes, it makes dogs hotter in the winter, but it also can act briefly as a way to insulate themselves from heat because there is a layer of air trapped against their skin. So for a little bit, it can be an insulator from the outside, but if the dog is exposed to heat over a long period of time, they can overheat due to fur. So, heat stroke and overheating, hyperthermia, is a serious problem for dogs, especially what I scientifically refer to as smush face dogs. Can you give an example of a smush face dog?
A pug.
A pug. Mm-hmm. Great example. They are officially called brachycephalic dogs, but they're smush face dogs. You know who I'm talking about. So they are especially vulnerable to that. But here are some signs of heat stroke. I know it's the winter, but it's still something to look out for all year round. Warning signs of heat stress and heat stroke. This is according to the American Kennel Club. This is verbatim from them. Heavy panting, dehydration, feeling warm to the touch, excessive drooling, red gums, rapid or irregular heartbeat, seizures, muscle tremors, lack of coordination, and unconsciousness. So if you notice these symptoms, immediately take your dog to the vet, to the animal hospital, and call them and tell them you're coming so they can be ready to deal with that. But luckily, there's a lot of ways to prevent heat stroke for your dog. You can give them shade and clean water when they're outside. Make sure the temperature in your house isn't too hot. Please don't leave your dog alone in the car. Don't exercise your dog when it's hot outside, so wait until the evening or the early morning to do that, which frankly makes sense because I don't want to exercise outside either when it's, you know, 100 degrees at noon.
Yeah, or be trapped in a hot car.
Yeah. Oof. You can also spray your dog with a cool bottle of water to keep their temperature down.
Like a fern.
Sure, but at least for a lot of dogs, I know that's like their punishment is like being sprayed with water. So maybe don't do that if that's your thing.
If you pant, you get this, the bottle.
Not great. Also, a really nice thing I learned is carry your dog's toys or balls home for them so that they can pant effectively. Because if they have a tennis ball in their mouth, They can't really
cute
pant effectively, so hold it for them. And then you can also get your dog a cooling vest when you go outside.
Is that like something you stick in the fridge?
And
you
put maybe. I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know. But I know that when we get a dog,
they're
we'll
getting
have one.
A cooling vest.
Yeah. So now, thinking about my friend Brooke, who is often a guest on the show, real quick, wanted to mention cats. Cats, they have sweat glands located in their lips, paws, chins, and around the anus. And I learned that grooming can help cats cool down because they're basically dispersing saliva all over their bodies, oof, which will evaporate like our sweat does.
So you're saying if a bunch of people spit on you, ugh, you'll be
no,
colder?
No, gross. Panting is not normal for cats. Not normal. It can be a symptom of stress or can be a symptom of overheating. It can also be a symptom of a possible disorder. So if you see your cat panting, please take them to the vet.
Thanks, Margaret.
Yeah, you're welcome. So before we end each episode, we always have a short segment where we share something interesting that we've read, listened to, watched, or otherwise consumed this week. Kevin, you want to go first?
Margaret. Remember that movie you and I watched?
Yes.
It's called The Birdcage.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, we watched a couple movies this week. Go ahead.
Yeah. I also watched Jojo Rabbit with you.
So good.
Jojo Rabbit. But you had talked about that last episode, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it was great. But saw The Birdcage with Robin Williams, Nathan Lane in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Couple
yeah.
Plot
mostly.
Holes.
Well, yeah.
Sorry, this is your thing. Sorry.
No, it's fine. So, yeah, some files. It also is about a gay couple who owns nightclub. They do drag shows. Very cool. Definitely talk about gay folks in a way that's like, well, this is very 1996. But I do love Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Love seeing him in a movie that was very famous I had not seen.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan Lane was great. Hank Azaria is great. Very funny in
yes.
it. A very young Calista Flockhart is in it.
Yes. Extremely young.
Or young looking. She was like 33.
Yeah, but still very
anyway,
yeah,
saw
very
The Birdcage. Good movie. Just check it out. Probably everyone has, but I had not.
Yeah, we might be late to the party. The thing that I have consumed this week, in fact, extremely recently, that I'm excited about is the Democratic debate.
Yeah.
We just watched, we like literally just got home from watching the Democratic debate.
In Nevada?
Yes, the debate was in Nevada. We were not in Nevada.
Oh.
I think we can be pretty transparent. We are big supporters of Warren, and she killed it. She nailed it tonight. She did such a great job. She took Bloomberg down. It was amazing. She's just such a smart, capable person, and it really showed tonight. So, loved watching it.
Yeah.
Love her.
Turns out that if you have some NDAs about some past sexual harassment cases, people can bring that up when you're running for president.
And maybe you shouldn't refer to them as women who just didn't understand your jokes, because yeah. it makes you seem terrible.
Not only seem, anyway.
Anyway, yeah. Go Warren, hashtag Team Warren, donate.
But research all the politicians, though.
Yeah, research all the politicians, but also Warren's great. All right, so it's now time to wind down this show. Thank you so much for listening today.
Never said it that way before.
I don't know. I lost my place.
Well, kids.
In our outline, so I forgot.
Like taking your shoes off.
Well,
it's about
good
that
night
time.
For me. Thank you so much for listening today. Really, you can hear more content like this from our Sister Wife podcast, From U to O, hosted by me.
Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions is a podcast produced by Two Birds, One Scone. Articles, blog posts, and more about what you can do every day to conserve our environment can be found at www.twobirdsonescone.org.
The theme music is original music by Camillo.
Please rate, review, subscribe.
That's right.
Give us those 5 stars.
Share us on your social media platforms.
Find us everywhere podcasts are found. We always love hearing from new listeners, hearing from veteran listeners, And speaking of hearing from all of those listeners, if you have some scientific misconceptions that you'd like explained or just want to provide feedback to us, you can always email us at don'tbeonyourleg@gmail.com. Have a great week.